welcome to another episode of Scholarly Peers. My name is Sin Mong Chong. I will be your host today. Following on with our conversations with different scholars in different academic disciplines, today I have another guest with me today, and this time we have Dr. Sathina Chen, who is Associate Professor in Language Assessment, here with us to talk to us about her experience in journal peer review. Welcome, Sathina.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sathina, can you briefly introduce yourself and your experience in journal peer review?
As you said, I'm an Associate Professor in Language Assessment, and I have published in peer-reviewed journals, chapters in edited books, single-authored and joint-authored books, as well as research reports as an author. And I have also been serving as a reviewer for a range of peer-reviewed journals, and I also got some experience in sort of editing special issues for journals. Yeah.
Right. So you wear different hats, obviously, in the journal review process as an author, peer reviewer, and editor as well. Yeah. I wonder if you can start by sharing with us your experience in peer review in terms of an author. So we're thinking about some unforgettable experiences, and I always ask my guests to interpret the word unforgettable because this can be quite personal. So why don't we start with your experience as an author?
I guess the first time when you receive quite critical comments for the first time could be quite difficult. Yeah, so it's like you really need time to sort of digest the information and just to take it in. I think, at the beginning it's quite, I guess it's sort of like, I still remember the feelings like when you're quite, because you waited for the comments, right? You often, you have to wait for the feedback. And then when you look at the feedback, it's not what you expected. I still can remember like the disappointment, and then I think usually at the beginning it's like denial, like it's like I'm not sure what this is about, and I don't agree with what the reviewers say, and I think so this is sort of like at the beginning of the journey, I would say, but it does get easier as time goes. I do want to share like another experience, which is actually on the positive side, because sometimes I think when you receive a really good, helpful and constructive review on your work, it's actually a very, very good experience, I would say. And I still remember it because like somebody spending a lot of time and effort helping you to improve your work. And when the review is conducted in a way that is really constructive, really helpful, then I found it really unforgettable, like working with the reviewer to improve one of my manuscripts. So it was a really good experience.
I think that's actually a very good reminder. I mean, reminding ourselves that, you know, the peer reviewer and the author, they don't necessarily know one another, but you know, somehow they're working together to make a piece of research better. I mean, that's like quite miraculous and quite hard to believe sometimes that somebody you don't know would spend some time working with you on your work. So I think that's an aspect of peer review that we sometimes forget. I wonder if you still remember your first journal submission.
Yeah.
And can you tell me a little bit about what it's like? For example, did you do it on your own or with your supervisor or the colleague? What was the kind of scenario and the outcome like for your first ever journal submission?
So I think one of my first submission was turning, because I did some work on a research project. So it was like a matter of turning a research report into like a journal article. So it was, there was things to learn, because research reports usually are more technical. And because you are writing for the funder very often, whereas when you're submitting to a journal, the readership is different. So it's the experience of getting that right, learning the differences between like the readership between like a research report and a journal article. And I did work with my supervisor at the time. Yeah, so it was good like to sort of know about the differences and being guided through the process.
I want to kind of deviate from our questions, a list of questions a little bit further, because I think you have a kind of experience that's quite unique, because you're, Sathina is being very humble that she didn't really say that how many grants that she have won. I mean, from your website, I've seen that you have won over 25 research grants already, mostly in language testing. So I'm going to say it for you. So I think it's very different, as you said, writing up a technical report for a funder and turning that into a journal article. Because a lot of us, we talked about turning a thesis into a journal article, and that's what we always talk about. So I wonder, I mean, you talked a little bit about that in your response, but I wonder if you can tell us a little bit more about what are the major differences between like a grant report and a journal article, for example.
I would say the readership is one thing that we have to be mindful, and the purpose that they serve is different, even though they are both sort of communicating research outcome and contributing to knowledge. But for a research report, very often you have to pay attention to sort of the interests of the funders. So sometimes it could be on practical issues, like finding solutions for a particular challenge that the field is facing. Whereas for journal articles, we have to read quite widely to sort of understand where your research fits into the wider scope of either is in language assessment or second language writing or like second language acquisition. So you sort of have to do some work to find out where your research study fits into a particular landscape of research in general, and then try to because one of the criteria of publishing in a journal article is like you have to show that you're contributing to some knowledge, right? So it's a matter of finding that to fit into the scope of the wider landscape.
Right. That's very helpful. Thank you. Let's continue with our questions. Still on your unforgettable experiences, but this time maybe putting on your peer reviewer or editor hat, do you have anything to share with us?
I forgot to say that I actually didn't publish my thesis because you mentioned that. So I didn't publish my thesis. I didn't turn it into like journal articles, but I did publish it as a book. So I think that is also something research students could consider as well. So sometimes it's not only journal articles, because there are different avenues for publishing your work and sharing your work. So in terms of experiences as an editor, so I think it's an eye-opening experiences for me, especially the first few times when I was sort of be in a position as a guest editor for special issues, that you get to see different kinds of reviews. I think that is quite eye-opening, and like you see yeah, like a range of styles and like how people interact, like how people receive reviews as well. Some people really take it quite positively, and there's some would be quite defensive. And but it's, yeah, I think it's good start to sort of like get behind the scene, if you like, to see how it actually works. So I think for definitely the first time when I was doing like special issues, that was unforgettable for me. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think having that insider's understanding, right? Because it's peer review is sort of like mysterious to most people.
Yeah.
And most people think of editors as like outer space beings, like they're, you know, so it's interesting to kind of have that firsthand experience to kind of humanize the experience overall. I also want to go back to, you know, like writing for a grant or a grant report or technical report and journal publication from the perspective of reviewers.
Mm.
Because I, you know, when you finish a report for your fund, it will be reviewed.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, you know, a journal article before it's published.
Mm.
Any differences in the review process or maybe the focus?
Yeah, I think review by the funder for research projects, I would say they are comparatively straightforward. Because I think usually they would tend to focus on things that are not clear, like ask for clarification, and then sometimes it's about the discussion of the implications of the results, and of course they would sometimes also have a say in what will go into the public domain as a funder, and then so. It would be like it's like a communication process and more. Whereas when you submit the research into like journals, then the process is sort of different because first of all you don't know whether you would get accepted, right? So the focus would be. As I said, like whether your research is addressing some kind of research gap in the field and making unique contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And so their concerns most often would be sort of like where it fits. Yeah. And because sometimes so the readership really is different. So you're writing to people who are interested in particular assessment practice or like a particular product, whereas more like for the practice or theory in general in the field, so it would be different. And I think it also depends on the focus of the particular journal as well, because some would focus more on the methodological questions and maybe more on research itself, I guess. Whereas when it is for the research reports, very often it's about the assessment, like a test, a particular test or a particular product that we are looking at. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. And I think when you said that the kind of technical report review, it's more straightforward. I think it's mostly about communication or clarification. I think part of the reason is because you got the fund.
Yeah.
There was a previous round of assessment that was extremely rigorous and competitive, and
you
got past that. And that's why I think people would, the funder would have that confidence that, of course, this team is able to do the job that they promised to do. So but that's a very, very interesting topic that I think I have never discussed with other academics in this podcast. So thank you very much. Let's go to another set of questions, which is about your previous experience with journal peer review when you started as a researcher, as an academic. Do you remember how you learned to navigate the peer review process? Did somebody tell you what to do, or you just went for it, trial and error, or what's your approach?
as an author or as
a I mean reader? both. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's really trial and error by doing it. You learn by doing it. I do find that as an author that of course there are good and more discouraging experiences, but it helps if you submit to different avenues, different journals, and because I think each of them has their own scope, in a way, like their own culture or like the focus of a particular journal, and sometimes it's about how to select the most suitable journal for your research. Because I did have some experience, I have a lot of problems submitting a piece of research to one particular journal, spent a lot of time going round and round, didn't get anywhere. But and then when I submitted to somewhere else, then it got in without too much of problems. So it's learning all this, like how to navigate the different journals, and yeah. So I would say really like by doing it, learning it the hard way. But I can't see I don't know, this is maybe my way, but I think it's also useful to work with senior colleagues, to sort of mentoring you through the process, because sometimes it can be tough. Yeah. And I think as a reviewer, I was lucky that when I was a guest editor, I worked with a very experienced editor. Sort of, she helped me. She explains to me like the procedures and all that. But when I had problems or challenges during the process, she was very generous in terms of offering suggestions and helps. And yeah, so I think for me it was like learning all this by doing it. But I would say having somebody to work with you is quite important. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's quite important for us to learn on the job and, you know, to get some hands-on experience. I think I'm still learning every day. I mean, I just realized there was one journal that I was trying to submit to.
Yeah.
And one of the requirements for me to submit my work is for me to check my own kind of similarity rate on Turnitin.
Mm, yeah.
So that's very interesting, because if I don't have a Turnitin subscription, like if I don't have a university affiliation and I don't teach,
then
does that mean I cannot submit to the journal? Because usually the journal does the similarity check, right?
Yeah.
It's very interesting. You find new kind of practices every day. But yeah, I agree with you. Having somebody to kind of make sense of the whole process is very important. But I want to go back to the kind of fundamental question, because you said we just try and do it and we'll learn while we're doing it. But I think to a lot of our listeners who are doctoral students or early career researchers, they ask this question, how do I know that I'm ready to submit my first manuscript? Because you were saying previously that try it and you'll learn something. But the question that somebody will ask is, when do I know I'm ready for it?
Yeah, I think I would say the first step is really to talk to your supervisor, and because they would know whether you're ready or not. And I think it's interesting whether it's the piece of research. Sometimes it's like you have finished part of your research, and then so your supervisor will be able to tell you whether that part of research is substantial enough to be published. And then so that is sort of the first question, right? And then the second question is how you turn that part of your research into like a publication. So and I think so talking to your own supervisor or like colleagues that are senior than you who has sort of experience in publishing, that sometimes it's just for them to take a quick look at your manuscript, and then to tell you whether I think for experienced researchers, they would be able to do that within quite a short period of time. So that would be really, really helpful for research students, I think, because sometimes when you submit it, then you have to wait for months and months before you get a response. So I would say try to make use of your informal network, to get to a point that you think you are quite confident, and then submit. Yeah,
I think that what you said is really good, because sometimes when we invite other colleagues to read our work, some people may expect that it will take up a lot of their time, because they would think, are you asking me for comments or feedback? But you know what you said was like, you make it clear that please just have a quick look, just tell me what you think, because it may take them, I don't know, 15 minutes, 30 minutes to do so, because that's actually what most editors operate, because they have so many manuscripts. They won't really, you know, go into every single word. They would just read it very quickly, and they determine whether it's suitable for review, right? So I guess that's also a very good suggestion for ECRs to seek support. I want to, on a slightly unrelated note, Sathina, you mentioned for your PhD thesis, you decided to publish it as a book rather than journal articles. And I think that's actually quite useful for our listeners. What made you make that decision? Like, it's a book. It's suitable for a book, but maybe less so for journal articles.
Well, actually, it was my supervisor who suggested that. So I guess it depends on the nature of your PhD research, whether because in language assessment there are a series of like book series that publish research on that. So first of all, you need to know that whether that is a possibility, and then so if you're, because you as you do your PhD, you read things, right? And then I think you can start thinking about, okay, where my research would fit into, like maybe similar to this kind of books that I've been reading, or like this kind of journal that articles that I've been reading. And then you sort of start thinking about it, because I think for research students, it's quite important to read, especially when you have your mind or interested in a particular journal, really to spend some time to look at the articles that publish in a particular journal, because by reading it you get to be familiar with their style or their focus and what sort of research that they publish, and then you sort of mold your article towards that, because sometimes it's a matter of showing the editor or the reviewers that you actually you're familiar with the journal as well, because readership is very sometimes we review studies that maybe the studies are okay, but it just don't suit the journal. The scope of the journal. But I mean, very often the reviewers or the editor will be able to point it out to let the author know that, okay, this is a good research study, but or like a paper, but it's not suitable for us. But the thing is, if you can do this yourself, or like discuss this with senior colleagues, then you save yourself time. Because when the time you get a feedback like that, probably we're talking about 3 months, 6 months. Yeah.
That's so true. That's very good advice. Thank you. Do you have or do you face any challenges during the peer review process from your experience? Do you remember?
I think as an editor, the finding reviewers can be quite challenging, because people can be very busy. And because you have to balance out, right? So different journals have different, some have two, some have three, and then you want to sort of balance out the apart from topic interest, but also some maybe the focus of their experiences, like whether it's qualitative or quantitative or mixed method, and the experience of the reviewers themselves as well. So it's a lot of thinking. And then when you send out invitations, and sometimes people can't do it, and so that is quite, I think it's getting more and more an issue. Like, we have a lot of manuscripts coming in and then not enough reviewers. And because even like as a reviewer, I noticed that, because in the past, even though you regularly review for different journals, usually there's some gap between invitations. But nowadays, it's like there's no gap. So once you have finished one, like 2 days later, you get a new invitation. So yeah, and because I know how hard it is to find suitable reviewers, so I tend to do it as I can. But yeah, but I know that this is like a challenge.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that all editors face. And I just had an invitation from an editor the other day, and on top of that invitation email, which was generated from the system, he added a note and say, "I couldn't find anybody. This has been sitting for half a year. Can you please help me?" So I did that quite quickly. So, you know, sometimes you really, it's hard. But yeah, that's definitely something to think about. And I think to look at the issue that you shared on the, I mean, in another way, it's to think about contributing as a peer reviewer. And definitely there are so many things that you can learn through the process. Am I right?
And actually, it's good for research students to get involved in as a reviewer as well, because I think most journal editors, they will send other reviews when the whole review process finished, right? So you get to see, usually you get to see other reviewers review as well. So I think that is sort of part of the learning process, because you basically two or three reviewers read the same article, and then you get to see what other people say and learn from each other. So that is sort of how I learned as well.
And that brings us very smoothly to our next question about what can be done to support early career researchers or doctoral students in the peer review process. And Sathina, you mentioned being a reviewer definitely helps. Do you have other suggestions?
Well, I think like this podcast we are doing, I think it's a very, very good initiative, like sort of opening up the black box, if you like, and sharing our experiences, because it's quite interesting, because reviewers are important, right, in the field. Like you help with the publication, you sort of benchmark the quality of research in your field. But if we think about it, not many of them have received formal training. I don't think so. So most of them, like did it as we learned. And so I think it might be useful to have some kind of training opportunities, whether it's in the form of webinars or, I don't know, like podcasts, like what you're doing. Like, you just to share the processes a bit more, so that people know about this. And I think it's also important for journals to provide guidelines on what they're looking for their reviews, from their reviewers, like what they should focus on. I think not very common, but I did have experience with one or two journals that actually share some examples of what they regarded as good review when they first invited you to be a reviewer for them. But I have to say, it's the minority. I only had once or maybe two times it's not very often, but I think it is a good practice. Like, because when you first review for a journal, it's good that you have enough information about what they are looking for.
I this is my first time who have, you know, heard about that practice. I think that's excellent. Can you tell me a little bit more about this? Is it upon request, or it's just alongside the kind of acceptance or invitation?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not sure whether it's the journal practice or the editor, but because usually when you get invited to be a reviewer, they will send you sort of some guidelines from the journal, like what they're looking for. And then for this particular invitation, I also received like an example of like a review. So I just thought, oh, that is interesting, and that is quite, but at that time I already had some experience, but I thought if that happened at the beginning of my reviewer journey, then that would be really, really helpful.
Oh, that's very good practice. Yeah. Okay, good. So we're coming to a close to our podcast. So our final question is, what advice would you give to early career researchers or doctoral students who are going to submit their first manuscript to a journal? Any encouraging words for them?
Yeah, I think so familiar yourself with the scope and readership of the journal that you're interested in submitting, and pay attention to formatting. And because sometimes we receive manuscript that you can clearly see that is from a thesis or from a dissertation, because they haven't changed everything carefully enough. So that would be a shame, because you put yourself in a very bad position. So spend enough time on formatting and proofreading. That is another thing. And also, I remember my supervisor also always asked me a question like, so what? So when we present findings or describe some figures, and especially if you are your research is more quantitative, after you present figures and all that. So the question is, how you communicate the impact, the implication or impact of the outcome. So I think that is important. So focus on that sort of things. And I would say, from my own experience, publication timeline for special issues tend to be shorter, because they're quite focused, and also so that would be, I think, a good way of trying. Yeah, so to submit, to identify suitable special issues, and then try that before. I mean, that is one way of doing it. Yeah.
I like that last suggestion in particular, that special issues are usually a good place to start. As you said, it's shorter, and you're less likely to be rejected, because the editors need a certain number of manuscripts. So that's very good advice. Thanks, Athena. I think I enjoy this conversation a lot, because I think a lot of your examples are very original. I really like them. And also your experience, writing for funders and writing for journals. I think that's an angle that is very, very unique. So thank you again, Athena, for taking the time. Thank you so much. So everybody, thank you for listening. And you have just listened to my conversation with Dr. Athena Chen, Associate Professor in Language Assessment at the University of Bedfordshire. So stay tuned for more content on scholarly peers. See you all next time.